always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
What I always feel is that we can't kowtow to these fashions. And what is happening on American campuses and American cities, you've got, first of all, you have a lot of ignorant people there who's, I'm sorry to say, whose sense of history at best goes back to breakfast, not even that. Okay, they don't have the faintest clue what Hamas is. You know, I saw Gays for Gaza. You hear that?
I've seen the banner.
If you're gay and you're in Gaza, you're going to be shot right through the back of your head.
What I've said is march that banner into Gaza. Right.
Or women for Gaza. Look at the state of women there. They're chattel.
Yeah. He must listen to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show. Welcome back to the program. 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, your number one station in the region, all across the region, for live and local conservative talk. It is Monday. It's already May the 13th. Chris alluded to that earlier. We're about to hit. May just started. Don't take our month away from us. This is the Chris and Tim month. May 13th, 2024. Our birthdays are both later this month. 5:07 in the PM. Chris and I are joined, of course, with producer Joey V here as well, who's going to talk about the latest monkey movie later on. So Planet of the Apes. So, but you haven't seen it yet, though.
I haven't
though.
Seen it,
so we can't talk about it yet.
What I think it's about. I'll reenact it on the air. We'll do a little
there you go.
Radio play.
Very well. Well, Chris, Bibi Netanyahu there alluded to, I said that he listens to our show, because how often do we say, wouldn't it be nice if one of these protesting kids on these college campuses had actually cracked a history book before they protested?
You know, Tim, I was thinking when I was listening to Netanyahu, you know, we've seen plenty of stories. I've read them at the end talking about how these kids of today, young people, are depressed. They're not having the same type of lives that we had growing up, that were fulfilled, didn't have a lot of things going on to make us depressed. These kids don't have anything going on for themselves. They even admit that. And I think these protests, where they are glumming onto anything to have some type of relevance in their lives, I think proves that. I mean, how else do you explain, if you have a modicum of common sense, putting up banners talking about gays for Gaza or women for Gaza, when you, as the prime minister said, you'd be shot in the back of the head if you held up that type of banner? I think they need a cause. They need something that's bigger than themselves, to make their lives feel that they're worthwhile. And so they glum onto the latest cause, even if it doesn't, make any sense. If they want to glum onto something bigger themselves, as we talked earlier, Christianity, and I think that's going to be part of the stump speech.
And boy, did you hit the nail on the head. And that is exactly part of one of the problems. And there's many problems. Look, we're not going to blame it on any one thing, but our society, our culture, has convinced a certain generation of people younger than us. Look, something happened around the 90s when we had the rise of the school shootings, beginning with Columbine. And it's exactly what you said, Chris. Society convinced everyone that they should do all self-care. It should all just be about themselves, and they shouldn't look beyond the end of their nose. And it should all just be about what makes you feel good. What makes you feel better? It's all about you. And you get so inwardly looking, it becomes a pretty lonely place eventually. Yeah. And then on top of that, what do? You lock them in their homes for 2.5 years through a pandemic. Like you said the other day, some of these college kids now, they had not only their high school graduation canceled, but now some of them are having their college graduation canceled because of a small ragtag band of lunatics who doesn't know world history are deciding to protest the Israelis and like the biggest showing of anti-Semitism we've seen since the World War II generation and support terrorism. And they don't even really know what they're doing. And yes, Chris, it's because they have no sense of a greater good outside their little narrow view of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's not all their fault, because society has told them to do that for the last several decades.
Exactly. And this is just a symptom of that. So if you have that hole in your psyche, hole in your spirit, that you want to belong, that you want to feel like your life means something, and here's these professors, these people you look up to that are supposed to be your role models telling you, well, this is how you can fulfill your destiny as a great person by protesting the occupation of Palestine by the Israelis, then this is your way to do it. This is for you to not just be some nameless number in the crowd, but a part of something big.
And you know, it all begins and ends with parenting to an extent. Some of it's nature, a lot of it's nurture, and I'm not going to be able to take credit for much of this because I wasn't around a lot the first 7-8 years of my daughter's lives because I was in Jefferson City a lot. But I did the best I could, and my wife did a magnanimous job. And my kids aren't perfect, but they have that greater awareness. You know, number one, neither one of them is really into social media. Mm. Praise Jesus, you know, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And number two, they like to do things like community service and going to youth group stuff. And, you know, it's that bigger sense of self versus sure. sitting in your room and just being, you know, on the internet all day.
Yeah.
Or,
and then comparing yourself to this kid and
yes.
their body and their life and my life sucks and this is glamorous. It's happening to these people. My life is dull mm-hmm. and boring.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, go out. Number one, go outside. You know, go outside.
Exactly. Get some sunshine.
Be with your friends. Spend actual time with your friends, not over the internet,
yeah.
not playing video games, not that there's anything wrong with that,
not
just everything in moderation.
Not Facebook Living yeah. or anything.
Everybody has the ability to have friends, whether it's one friend. Sometimes just having one friend is better than having 100 friends. So get a friend, go outside, go do something yeah. together. Yeah. And there's plenty of organizations and groups that need a lot of help these yeah. days. Everyone's struggling. And so, you know, I find it so good. Like when you just do something for somebody else or what, as simple as going to like a trivia night or yeah. something, you know, you're doing something that benefits some other person and you're with other people. Be in society, you know,
that's one of the remedies that that psychologists use for people that are feeling depressed is to go out and do something for other people. Go out and volunteer, and doing something for others takes that depression, takes your focus off of yourself, and it makes you feel good. And they've done studies where your dopamine goes up, mm-hmm. you know, and everything by volunteering, taking your eye off your own problems and mm-hmm. helping someone else. And it makes you also realize that your situation may not be as bad as you think it is. Others sometimes have worse situation and may have a better disposition about their situation than you do.
Mm-hmm. Tony Colombo, I saw an article on the printer, and I have a feeling it's something Tony would have printed out because he prints out these interesting things all the time. And the headline was, scientists recommend that everyone be outside for a minimum of 67 minutes a day. I don't yeah. know where they came up with that number. And you know, I sometimes feel better when I simply go for a walk around the neighborhood yeah. and wave at some of the neighbors.
Yeah.
The simplest thing in the world, but it reminds me, okay, you know, I've got a lot of problems. You internalize them. Go outside, smell the roses, see the sunshine, feel the wind on your face, wave to the neighbors, and you're like, okay, it's a big wide world. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got problems and challenges. This too shall pass.
Exactly.
And it's good to get that. Like, it's like the vitamin D and the dopamine yeah. and the fresh air. Sometimes I feel that when we all sit in our cubby holes all day long on our computers, then you're really becoming hyper insulated and it's not healthy either. Yeah.
And it's not, you know, body and mind are one. If your body is not feeling good, then your mind most likely is not going to be healthy. And you know the old physics rule, a body at rest stays at rest, a mind at rest stays at rest. You have to keep both of them active for the both of them to be healthy, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Health and Wellness by Tim and Chris.
Wow.
Joey, do you enjoy that? Do you feel better now?
I hate new segments because then I have to make a new theme song. Don't make this a habit.
We need a sponsor for the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show health and wellness segment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what? Comprehensive Chiropractic should probably
exactly
do that every day. So welcome back to the program. Hope everybody's having a good Monday. You know what's a great thing about our show is no matter what day it is, we're almost to the end of it, right? We help you get through the last part of it. Jam-packed 5 o'clock hour here, as Chris referenced. I will do the speaker stump speech in a second. And I'm going to talk about a lot of the things. We kind of did the stump speech, but I'm going to talk about a lot of the themes about, you know, how do we pull ourselves back from the abyss that civilization seems to be heading towards? And I think having a good moral grounding. And look, none of us are perfect. We're all sinners. None of us, we all live in a glass house and we throw stones at it all the time. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to be better. So I'll talk about that in a segment, And then at 5:25, the aforementioned Susie Moore. Hey folks, go to @SmoozyQ on Twitter and check, or on Facebook. Go to Susie's Facebook page as well and tell me if her daughter doesn't look like a mini me of Susie Moore. It's like, it's truly indeed. I'm going to ask, you know, a lot of times parents will say, my kid doesn't look like, I wonder if Susie thinks that her daughter looks like her or not. So we'll ask that burning question at 5:25. And we'll also, of course, cover all of the top red state headlines of the day. I know Susie's been covering the Trump trial very closely. The Trump trial resumed today. Donald Trump had a huge rally in deep blue New Jersey over the weekend. And even the national corporate media networks are admitting that nearly 100,000 people showed up in South Jersey, apparently near Vic Porcelli's old hometown. And
was Vic there?
He said he wanted to be there. Yeah.
I was wondering, is that why so many people showed up?
It might have been. He would be the big draw. We'll talk to Smoozy Q about all of those topics and more. Continuing to watch the Missouri Senate. They are on SJR 74, which is the initiative petition reform. The Democrats are filibustering. The latest report I got was they might filibuster till 7 or 8 o'clock tonight, and then they might let the bill come to a vote. So we could have an update on that tomorrow morning. Mike Ferguson will have it at 5:30 when he hits you out of the gates. Folks, we have 6 local shows here. They're all flipping fantastic. And then we have Dan Bongino middays. All right, without further ado, let's get to the speaker's stump speech, which is going to be about the fact that, yes, religion could save us from the abyss.
Listen to me.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for the speaker's stump speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
So the focus of this article is not on the everyday or the extraordinary saintly men and women among us, right? So whether someone is a practicer of a particular religion or a faith, right? You know these people, right? There are, despite all the complaints that we have and despite all the horrors and challenges of 2024, planet Earth, there are good people among us, right? And those are the people we go, man, you know, they're a saint, right? We always say that. They're a saint. They're a wonderful person. So, of course, those folks are exemplary of, you know, a good life, whether they're Christians, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, Muslims, whatever. There's good folks right out there. What the article I found in the Spectator World points out is, how about the unorthodox folks who are embracing religion, who are embracing Christianity? And that's kind of the point of today's speaker stump speech is, when you look at the people who you might not think of as goodly or godly people who are suddenly turning to God, turning to religion, maybe that is what's going to pull us back from the abyss. The unlikely potential saints among us. Now, I'm not saying these people are capital S saints, that they're going to be inducted into the Saint Hall of Fame, but there's some people out there who are unlikely folks who are now showing us that maybe we do need to think about something greater than ourselves. The unorthodox folks embracing Christianity, that is the subject of today's speaker's stump speech. It can be found at spectator.com, the article I'm referring to. There's a growing awareness among intellectuals on the right that only the remnants of Christianity are keeping Western civilization from the abyss. What is Jane Stanis, writing for The Spectator, talking about? Well, she gives her first example of Russell Brand. Did you know that Russell Brand was baptized this past Sunday? He said he was baptized in the River Thames, despite his tongue-in-cheek fear of catching a virus, and he's thrilled about it. He thanked those who embraced his decision to become baptized while expressing understanding of those who are cynical. He's not perfect, he explains, and anybody who knows Russell Brand knows that. He knows he's going to make mistakes, but he says, you know what? This is my path now, and I'm so grateful to be surrendered in Christ. Did you ever think that the very unorthodox, very non-politically correct Russell Brand would ever utter those words. Jane Stannis says, speaking as a Catholic, and I'm Catholic, this writer can't but consider the advantages of baptism in church. Waters freed from viruses and demons through exorcism, holy oils and proper storage might have been preferable. Yet it's impossible not to feel hopeful for someone like Russell Brand, and to wish him and other center-right celebrities who have been drawing closer to Christianity of late. Interesting phenomenon. Great things, possibly, for all of the future of humankind. There's definitely a place for cynicism, but you know what? There's also and always room for hope. Though Russell doesn't say that he's joined any specific church, yeah, let's give him some time. His wife happens to be Catholic. Add to the fact that only the other day he was teaching his 11 million followers on Twitter X to pray the rosary. Did you ever think you'd see that? First, devotion to Blessed Mary. Next, perhaps Catholicism. Like freshly admitted convert Candace Owens, we'll be hearing of Russell at the Brompton Oratory next, clad perhaps in sackcloth and ashes of a conservative blazer and tie. Now that would truly be putting on a new man. The rosary was also a step on the road for Tammy Peterson, wife of the religiously reluctant but yet very famous Jordan Peterson. The story of her terminal cancer diagnosis and cure is well known. Against all odds, she was completely and miraculously, she believes, restored to health, and she joined the church this past Easter. "I know what brought me here," she told interviewers after the ceremony. "I've been looking for Mother Mary since I was a little kid." Historian Tom Holland spoke a few weeks ago about his own dealings with the Queen of Heaven. Raised Anglican, the young Holland quickly lost his faith. Over the years, he came to see Christianity as the moral foundation of Western civilization. And even though he was still very agnostic, he began to attend Anglican services once again at St. Bartholomew the Great. Coincidentally, the only place in London where the Blessed Virgin is said to have appeared. At Christmas of 2021, Holland attended St. Bartholomew's midnight service in some distress. He had just been diagnosed with bowel cancer. The outlook was not good. As the ceremony ended, he found himself glancing over the spot where Our Lady is said to have appeared. He decided he might as well head over there and, not to put too fine a point on it, pray. No atheist in a foxhole, he told himself. This was his first prayer since he was a kid, Holland said. On the spot where the Blessed Virgin came down from heaven, he sent up a heartfelt plea for help. "Please help me." From that point on, he says, all kinds of things began to go right. Today, he's well. He's cancer-free. Was it a miracle? Holland thinks, well, maybe that's possible. It could have been a remarkable series of coincidences. But is that ungrateful to the Virgin? Yes, a friend tells him, and he can't but be captivated by a God who would deliberately fly in the face of his every prejudice as a Protestant agnostic, confronting him not just with a supernatural intervention, but Mary with intercessory prayer, with the medieval and the Catholic, all the sorts of things with which he most emphatically doesn't identify. There's a number of other examples in this piece. It's a rather short piece. I'd urge you to check it out. Of other people, other folks, other intellectuals on the right who have now returned to some sort of faith, whether it's Catholicism or some other branch of Christianity. Claiming to rid the world of superstition, the piece concludes, the Enlightenment thought to pave a way to a glorious new future. Remember, the Enlightenment was to free man from the bondage of having to be shackled to any particular religion. But in turning away from Catholicism, free thinkers and reformers together cut Western culture off from the life-giving inspiration of many like the Blessed Virgin Mary. And now we're surprised our civilization is running out of steam? The only surprise is it's lasted so long. Could Christianity and a reconnection with Christ, with God, with a being greater than ourselves, somehow pull us back from the abyss? It's not too late. It never is. And that's the stump speech for today.
Good stump speech. Yeah, it's never too late. As long as we are breathing, that means that God still has a plan for all of us and still has a plan for this earth as we know it. I think every person, especially famous people, wealthy people that have everything, they realize that, you know, their wealth, their fame, their power, the material things don't really mean anything. There's always still going to be that hole or that emptiness there. And they realize that the only thing that can fill that hole of Christ is fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And Paul says, I can be content in all things and in all circumstances. Mm-hmm. And wealth, money, and power and fame can't do that for you.
And it's fine to always be questioning. Some of the greatest Christian apologists of mm-hmm. our time, and before us, C.S. Lewis and others, they always questioned. It's okay to question, but how about just stepping away from always being focused on yourself? Step out there, look at the greater world around you and go, was this all an accident?
Yeah.
You know? And think about that connection of yourself to others and to the world.
Yeah. I mean, the Bible tells us that God puts in every person a desire to know him, whether they admit it or not. Everyone knows just by looking at the stars and the moon, the mountains and nature, that couldn't have been evolution or just happenstance. Many deny it, atheists deny it, but man inwardly knows there's a God. Is will he acknowledge him is the big issue.
Wise words, indeed. Let's leave it right there. 5:25 in the p.m. When we come back, we're going to shift gears and talk about all the big headlines up at redstate.com. Plenty to talk about with the Trump trial resuming. It's fourth week. Can Susie tell us, is it continued to be a case in search of a crime, or have they stumbled on something in Alvin Bragg's courtroom? All of that next when the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show rolls on here at 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It's quite a variant of what she said to me in 2018.
Okay, but you say it's not a Me Too case.
It is not a Me Too case. I mean, I wasn't assaulted. I wasn't attacked or raped or coerced or blackmailed. They tried to shove me in the Me Too box to further their own agenda. And first of all, I didn't want any part of that because it's not the truth, and I'm not a victim in that regard.
That's not what she's saying now. She's talking about he was bigger and blocking the way. It's all the Me Too buzzwords. She said there was a power imbalance of power for sure. My hands were shaking so hard. She said she blacked out.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. Yeah, how about that, Chris? Bill Maher, who is still a liberal's liberal, let's not pretend he's becoming a conservative, and no fan of Donald Trump, is becoming an advocate for Donald Trump in the Manhattan trial.
Especially when it comes to the credibility of a porn star who sees devils and speaks to ghosts.
Let's see
hear that part of her story.
Let's see if our expert witness can figure all of this out and more.
Oh, Susie Q, baby, I love you. Susie Q.
I'm the boss.
That's
how about
right.
That?
As she does every Monday afternoon around this time, Susie Moore, Deputy Managing Editor over there at RedState, redstate.com, frequent contributor, commentarian, and host here at News Talk STL. I may have just invented a new word there, Susie. Commentarian.
I think it works.
Well, Susie, is the trial in New York City, which even Bill Maher, can you believe it? Even Bill Maher has become critical of. No fan of Donald Trump, definitely still a liberal's liberal. If he can become a critic of this, Susie, I guess we can be as well. Is this still a persecution and a trial in search of a crime? Or have we discovered anything now that we've entered, what, the fourth or fifth week?
Fifth week. So Michael Cohen was on the stand today, and I haven't gotten all the way through his testimony yet. I'm summarizing it, but I only got about halfway through before I had to do some other things. So certainly his testimony is going to be critical to the prosecution's case, and to the extent the jury finds him credible, which of course we know is a big question mark, he's going to be critical to basically attaching or connecting Donald Trump to the decisions made to pay him back. The decision made to pay Stormy Daniels to begin with, then the decision made to reimburse Michael Cohen, and any decision made to categorize that payment as something other than what it actually was.
Mm-hmm.
I think it all kind of hinges on that. And from what I saw so far, I think Cohen's going to try and help them square that. But whether or not he can really be considered a reliable witness, and whether or not that still actually amounts to an actual violation of the provisions that they're pursuing this under, that remains to be seen.
Because he's an adjudicated liar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in several different instances. I mean, before Congress, before the court, all kinds of things. Yes.
Susan, we know that this administration, this Justice Department, has an aversion to protecting Republican or conservative Supreme Court justices. They wouldn't put marshals out there to protect them. We know that RFK Jr. is requesting Secret Service protection. This administration says that he doesn't need it, even though people are breaking into his house. And then you have an article today on redstate.com from our good friend Becky Noble on how Biden's Secret Service refuses to create a protective zone at the convention this summer in Milwaukee. Tell us more, please.
Well, I will tell you, I have not had a chance to read Becky's fine writing yet. However, yes, that is what my understanding is that they are being a little chintzy or stingy, if you will, with the affording the additional protection, which, of course, is, you know, you're not just talking about a bunch of Republicans at a convention, which you know is going to draw protests, but you're talking about a former president and potentially future president who, by that point, should be, I mean, he already has Secret Service protection because of the fact that he's a former president. But yes, there should be added security measures involved, and they should be willing to extend that. You know, at what point do you set your TDS aside and say, look, this is going to be a volatile situation and it's going to be a magnet for people who want to cause trouble and potentially, you know, disruption and violence. So hopefully they will get their act together and provide sufficient security so we don't have something like that. I know they don't want that at the Democratic convention, and it's going to be ripe for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Speaking to Susie Moore, Deputy Managing Editor at RedState.com, host of the More to the Point commentary. Speaking of the More to the Point commentary, Susie, you dropped a new edition of that this morning, and it's been playing on our station throughout the day. I want to dive into that a little deeper because I thought it was I think they're all fantastic. This one really hit home because I have a daughter in college right now, another one to follow, and your daughter just graduated this past weekend, and so that obviously inspired you to write about those occurrences and those events. And Susie, we're seeing one vision of America right now, and it's a horrible vision happening on college campuses. But unfortunately, and it's terrible and it's horrible and it's widespread, but it's not everyone. It's not every college. It's not every college student. You had a positive experience on a college campus this past weekend involving your own daughter. Do tell us about that and why you called this It's a Free Country.
I 100% had a positive experience. So, you know, I mean, Mizzou is where she graduated from, and that's been the site of you know, some protest activity in past years. And so I wasn't sure, you know, leading up to her graduation, if there was going to be some disruption there in relation to the latest wave of protests. I hadn't really heard much about it, and it didn't seem like it was really a thing. She said, no, there really hadn't been a whole lot about it on campus. What stood out to me as we sat through her graduation ceremony, and we kind of joked ahead of time, she graduated from the ag school, and I was like, if ever there were a school that would be the least likely favorable place to protest in favor of the pro-Hamas cause, the ag school kind of strikes me as one that wouldn't necessarily be very receptive to that. And there were a couple students who graduated that had some of the kind of traditional costuming, if you will, the kafeas, that sort of thing that they were wearing. But that, I mean, they got their certificates just like everybody else. It wasn't a disruption in any way, shape, or form. So one of the things that really stood out to me, it was kind of twofold. I sat in a crowded arena with 400 some odd graduates and academics and their families and everybody. So you're talking about, you know, several thousand people. And I didn't see a masked face among the crowd.
Wow.
Anywhere.
Wow.
I didn't, in any of the restaurants, I didn't, anywhere that I was out in public this weekend, see somebody wearing a mask. So that, to me, kind of stood out as sort of a symbol of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of the fact that, thankfully, this graduation was blessedly disruption-free, unlike, unfortunately, some of the other campuses, when we were out celebrating, we were out at a bar full of 20-something kids, you know, celebrating their graduations and, of course, drinking and, of course, flirting and doing all the fun things that kids, you know, are going to do or young people are going to do. And there was a band playing, and they played Toby Keith's Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. And to a person, that entire bar was jumping up and down and shouting the lyrics to that song.
Wow.
And so it just kind of stood out to me that was like, you know, for all the bad rap that Gen Z gets, and a lot of it's warranted, there are plenty of Gen Zers who have their heads on straight, who have their priorities straight, who love their country and love their freedom. So I just wanted to share that.
Fantastic.
Susie, you guys have, I don't know if you saw this, you guys have a video on redstate.com, Seinfeld versus woke students, Pelosi versus a Brit, and so on. And I wanted to talk to you about that since your daughter graduated from college this weekend, and we saw a bunch of commencement exercises that were disrupted, specifically the Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, he's, you know, kind of apolitical, doesn't really get in deeply involved in political things. What'd you think of the students walking out on Jerry Seinfeld, of all people?
Well, Chris, you know what? He hasn't been completely apolitical. He has in recent years been somebody who's spoken out, not necessarily in a partisan fashion, but for free speech and critical of the woke ideology to the extent that it censors, you know, comedic presentations and really kind of stifles the comedic spirit, if you will. So he has been critical of that, and he has been pretty open that he's pro-Israel. So it was that combination of things that I think sparked. And it, from what I understand, it was like a handful of students, maybe 20 or maybe 30 out of the entire class that got up and made a big stink or whatever. But I don't think that was appreciated necessarily by most of the rest of their fellow graduates. And, you know, I don't think they're accomplishing what they ostensibly want to accomplish.
Hmm. Yeah. Speaking to Susie Moore of Red State. Susie, there's a great article at redstate.com I'd encourage people to read regarding professional liar Jen Psaki. And look, we often make fun of Corinne Jean-Pierre, rightfully so, because she seems on a good day to be completely disorganized, disoriented, and confused. But Jen Psaki took to the propaganda podium like she was made for it, right, Susie? I mean, she made professional lying. She brought it to a new level, and she just did it, apparently, in a new book that she's got coming out, to the point where she has completely disparaged people that we should have the highest honor and respect for, Gold Star families, people who have lost their children in service to our country. They've responded to Jen Psaki with threats of impending litigation, and she probably deserves it. What did Jen Psaki do that has upset these great Americans amongst us?
So in her new book, her upcoming book, there's a line she's talking about that the ceremony where the 13 service members who were unfortunately killed during the Afghanistan withdrawal were brought back at Dover Airport. They were greeted on the tarmac by, of course, the families and President Biden and Jill Biden. And there's this sort of infamous images of Biden checking his watch, and that's kind of been a recurring, you know, theme, but you know, that's been mentioned a number of times, you know, that sort of showed insensitivity on his part, and the families noticed it, and they were upset about it. So she kind of poo-pooed that in her book and downplayed it and said, you know, that was misinformation. What had happened was, it was at the very end of the ceremony, he checked his watch as they were getting ready to leave the tarmac and go back to the car. It didn't happen multiple times. Well, that's disproven by some AP photos with timestamps on them and such, but it did happen on multiple occasions. And regardless of the AP photos, some of the family members themselves have said, we watched him do it several times. So basically, by putting that in her book and downplaying it like that, she's calling them liars. And I'm pretty sure that E. Jean Carroll can tell you a little bit about a defamation suit that involves being called a liar. That, you know, she may not hold it on appeal, but right now she's got an $85 million verdict in her favor against Donald Trump because he supposedly called her a liar by saying that she'd made up her story. So, yeah, they're mad, understandably so, and they kind of hinted that she may be hearing from their lawyers.
Good.
Susie, I want to get your thoughts on my Christmas corner I gave last week on how it seems that the media, especially the Sunday talk show hosts, have gone beyond just being moderators and asking questions, but they have taken it upon themselves to fact check their interviewees in real time now, and not just maybe correct them once, but they'll go back and forth with them to the point where it's like, are you working for CBS or are you working for the Biden administration? I mean, we don't want, of course, our media to be lapdogs, and they're not doing that with the Democrats. I would not mind it so much if they did it equally with the Democrats. But where is that fine line between pushing back and just being belligerent the way they are now, where they feel they should be fact checkers?
Well, I think you raise a really good point, Chris. They do the belligerence and the pushing back is seemingly only comes when it is a Republican or a conservative that they are questioning. You're not really seeing a lot of pushback when it is a Democrat. So, for instance, Joe Biden can spin a tall tale and not get pushback generally, whereas Donald Trump, I mean, think about the Leslie Stahl interview with him on 60 Minutes, where she was like, correct, you know, no, sir, you've got that wrong. And so we see that regularly. And what ends up happening is, you know, I mean, it is a delicate balance. I do think if someone is stating something that can be directly addressed in real time during an interview, it's fine to push back as a journalist and say, well, you know, what would you say about this information that seems to contradict that? I think that's fair. And I would much rather them do that than not say anything, regardless of who it is they're interviewing. But the bottom line is, whatever their standard is, whatever their practice is, it needs to be applied equally, no matter who the interviewee is.
I agree.
Susie, thanks for everything. Before we let you go, congratulations to you for graduating a child from college. And we were wondering, so I think your daughter looks like a mini-me version of you. Do you see that, or do you not think she looks like you at all?
So I think it's a combination. Her coloring is me completely. Her facial features are her dad completely. So
okay.
To me, she's a blend of her dad and me. But I when people say we look alike, I'm like, yeah, kind of, but not exactly. But I appreciate it. And I love the fact that people, you know, can recognize that she's my child.
Absolutely. Indeed. Definitely by design. And congratulations, Susie, once again.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great evening.
You too. We'll talk to you soon. Well, there you have it. Everything you need to know from Susie Moore and the graduation at Old Mizzou this weekend. Glad it went well, Chris, and without a hitch.
And I think she had the line of the day when she said probably the ag school is not going to be a lot of political activity there.
Not a hotbed of political dissension
exactly.
Over at Big Ag. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break here, go nowhere, because when we come back, we're going to wrap up everything else that you need to know, and we're going to tell you what Larry Connors has coming up at 6:05 on Larry Connors USA, followed, of course, by the Rob Carter Show at 8 o'clock. All that and more straight ahead. Keep it here throughout the evening for everything you need to know, near, far, and everywhere in between. 101.9 94.1. This is News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
More tribal leaders have decided that Governor Kristi Noem is not welcome on their land.
Yeah, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Council has voted to ban Noem from its reservation. In February, she was banned from the Pine Ridge Reservation. Together, these reservations make up about 10% of the state's land.
She said that councils were in on with the Mexican cartels, and she also made statements about her children and our parents, our schools. Pretty negative, derogatory statements.
5:52 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And this story has been updated, Tim. It's now two more tribes have banned the governor from their land. Now it's 20% of the state. The governor, Kristi Noem, cannot attend. Now,
why?
She accused them, tribal leaders, of dealing with drug cartels.
Oh.
Being a part of drug cartels.
Oh, my. That's a big accusation.
So they didn't particularly care for that. Mm. So they have banned her on the reservations. Mm. All right, Mr. Legal Mind.
Oh,
I know that reservations, they are sovereign. They have their own laws. Mm-hmm. They have their own government, basically. Does this hold up? Can they tell the governor of South Dakota that you cannot come on our land? Is it a simple trespassing? Can they say if she does it's trespassing type of thing more than anything? I mean, how do you ban the governor from going into somewhere in your state?
I'm going to say, with what little I know of tribal law.
I thought you specialized in that.
I did not, but I'll play one on the radio. I believe they can, Chris. I believe they can. So because of the guilt, let's just call it that. Let's just call it that our leaders have had for the Native American people over the decades and generations, and some of it deservedly so, right? Some deservedly so. We have given them sovereign areas. And even though this can be litigated, and it's been litigated in Oklahoma back and forth as to how much the Native American tribes in that area, there was an argument they made a few years ago that they own basically half Oklahoma.
I remember that.
Yeah, and that's been pushed back
on. Yeah, I remember that.
But look, for the areas that are adjudicated and determined to be reservation land, what goes on there, Chris, yes, is exclusively under the province of the Native American tribes to control those lands. Now, can you have an intersection of Native American law and U.S. constitutional law? You can, and that happens from time to time when you're dealing with things like treaties and maybe interstate commerce.
That was a Montana episode, season four.
That's right. Probably on Yellowstone.
Or Yellowstone, rather. But, season four.
But, Chris, as far as keeping someone, even the governor of a state, from coming on to their properties, I believe they can do so. Oh. Unless there's some kind of interstate highway or state highway that possibly goes through there, then she may be allowed to travel on those roadways.
Tim, to say that our youth are quote unquote off the chain is an understatement.
Yes.
The crimes that we're seeing our youth commit are horrible. We've seen a 17-year-old girl bash another girl's head into the concrete, almost killing her. A week later, we see a young man in junior high there in Jennings that was shot and killed. And we've got another sad story that shows how dire position that our youth are in. Cut 11, please, Joey.
And we're learning new details about a deadly shooting on a Metrolink platform near Forest Park. Police say a teenager shot and killed a woman Saturday afternoon.
Investigators say around 3:30 in the afternoon, a 17-year-old shot a woman on the platform. That victim died at the hospital. Investigators say the robust camera system on Metro platforms helped catch the 17-year-old in less than 24 hours. That teen is now charged with second-degree murder and armed criminal action and is locked up at the juvenile detention facility.
Tim, I'm going to give the liberal position. Look, this is a sad situation that this person came from a bad home, mm-hmm. and it's society's fault. We're washing guns, Tim. We need to get rid of the guns. They're too readily available. What would you say if someone... you know, that's the liberal's position on this particular crime.
Sure. Well, Chris, you know, if it's not the gun, it's the knife. If it's not the knife, it's the baseball bat. You know, the problem is not the instrumentality. It is the person wielding the instrument. We've talked about this time and again. We have a culture problem here. We have an accountability problem. We have a parenting problem. We have a lot of problems that are separate and apart from inanimate objects that these young people pick up and use for violence.
Huh. So she didn't do the back check. Oh, she's not old enough. And she's not old enough to own the gun either.
Tell me the law that would have stopped this.
Yeah, none. Great show today, guys. Tim will be back with us again tomorrow. 2 days in a row here. I love it.
Setting a record.
V, thank you for all of your great work. Larry Connors, USA Up is next, 6 to 8. I'm sure Larry will talk about the Michael Cohen trial and all the updates on that. He'll also probably talk about the commencement exercises over the weekend that were disrupted. You have been listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Thank you. Drive safe and have a great day.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.